You're listening to Everybody Pulls the Tarp, the go-to podcast for high performers. I'm Andrew Moses. Each week, you'll hear my thought-provoking conversations with Olympians, pro athletes, CEOs, elite coaches, best-selling authors, and other high performers to uncover their secrets to success. Get ready to be inspired each week when we talk about leadership, teamwork, work ethic, and more. Are you ready? Let's go. This week, my guest is former NFL quarterback Christian Ponder. In 2011, Christian was selected in the first round of the NFL draft by the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings made him the 12th overall pick, following Christian's prolific collegiate career at Florida State. After his NFL playing career was over, Christian turned his attention to the business world. Today, Christian is the founder and CEO of The Post, a new private membership network connecting athletes turned business leaders. Founded in April 2023, The Post is a business networking platform that connects Fortune 500 executives, unicorn founders, industry changemakers, and many more around their shared experiences as athletes. Christian and I recently sat down to explore his journey, which led him from a tough first season in peewee football as a kid all the way to the NFL. In our conversation, he shared a behind-the-scenes look at the mindsets, philosophies, and experiences that have shaped his approach on and off the field. We explored how Christian prepared to play one of the most demanding positions in sports, how he built his confidence to withstand adversity, and how he developed as a leader over time. Christian and I also dove deep into his transition from the NFL to the business world, specifically the work he's doing now to build The Post into a powerful community for former athletes to connect and thrive as business leaders. This conversation is filled with so many powerful lessons on leadership, entrepreneurship, and success that all of us can apply in a variety of ways to our own lives. Our conversation is also a powerful reminder of the ripple effect we can create when we bring people together around common bonds and shared experiences. This conversation was really fascinating, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So, let's pull the tarp and get straight to Christian Ponder. Christian, I want to begin with your football career, and I want to go way back. I'm curious, what is your first football memory?
Yeah, it's not a good one. Yeah, I grew up in Texas where football is pretty much a religion. And I played peewee ball. You know, I must have been 7, 8, 9 years old. And I hated it. And mainly I hated it because I wanted to be the quarterback. And at that age, traditionally the coach's son is the quarterback. And I, you know, my dad was not coaching this team. And so I was a tight end. And at that age, no one throws the ball. So really as a tight end, I was an offensive lineman. And my coach was a jerk. I mean, my coach, you know, again, we're little kids. We're getting cussed out and berated. And it was not fun. And so, essentially, my dad, very tough, like, grew up poor in rural Georgia, played football at Florida State, was the first one to go to college. Like, we weren't allowed to quit anything. And it actually got to a point where it was so bad, my dad actually let me walk away halfway through the football season and never show up again. So that's how bad it was. So, My first football memory was not a good one. And I grew up more around baseball, was a baseball player. That was my passion. And then I think as I got older, my talent football began to flourish at a more mature date. But yeah.
I remember as a kid, I played baseball, a lot of baseball as a kid. And I remember just being drawn to the catcher position. I loved the catcher's gear. I think they call it the tools of ignorance. But I love the gear. I just would beg my parents to go out to the sporting goods store and buy me catcher's gear because I thought that the gap between me and one day making the major leagues was the fact that the gear that was team issued by Little League didn't fit me and was dirty and rusty. I just thought if I had my own gear, my own catcher's gear that, you know, I might transform into Mike Piazza or something one day.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I got, when I was in baseball, I started in center field, moved to shortstop, and eventually ended up a catcher. And I think quarterback, catcher, like I want to be involved in every play, I think. And that's why I was drawn to being a catcher. Plus the gear was cool, right? Like you were the one unique position. It was kind of pitcher and catcher. Like very unique positions compared to everyone else.
I wanted to, you know, ask you that as well. I'm always curious to ask people why a certain position, and you just answered the question right there. You know, one of the things that you were drawn to in terms of the quarterback position, when was the first time that you played the quarterback position and got to experience some of that, what you thought it was like, and kind of confirm that that was something that you really enjoyed?
Yeah, it was so obviously Pee Wee ball didn't work out for me, and then picked it back up when I was in seventh grade in middle school and had the chance to play quarterback. I actually played both sides of the ball. I didn't make the A team. I was in the seventh grade B team, and I was cornerback and quarterback. And then, you know, and then eighth grade, I was on the A team. I was the backup quarterback, but then a starting cornerback. And then fortunately, when I got to freshman year high school, you know, made the freshman A team as the starting quarterback. And then, you know, the rest was history. But it was great to get out there, you know, kind of be a part of every play and make decisions. And I, as a baseball background, felt like I threw the ball well. And, you know, it was where I was most confident in being on the field. And fortunately, it worked out for me.
Were there quarterbacks, whether it be NFL quarterbacks or collegiate quarterbacks or somebody on your team that you felt like you modeled your game around from a quarterback perspective at a younger age, obviously, yeah, you know, as you were getting up there?
Yeah, John Elway. I wore number 7 and he was the inspiration from that, which I grew up in Dallas. So I was actually grew up a Denver Broncos fan rather than a Dallas Cowboys fan, which is sacrilegious over there. But I just remember watching him, his physicality, his toughness. You know, the iconic moment that stands in my mind of when I became a John Elway fan was when, you know, his helicopter move into the end zone when he dove for the end zone. Like, that was mesmerizing for me, and that's who I wanted to be like.
When did you feel like things started to click and playing at a very elite collegiate level and potentially in the NFL down the road, when did you feel like that became a real possibility in your mind?
It was pretty late, honestly. You know, when I got to my second year of high school, I was still on the JV team, but I started to have the confidence of like, I feel like I'm the best person on the field. Now, I didn't know how that would translate when I got to the varsity level. My sophomore year, kind of had his own offensive coordinator, you know, kind of built the offense around my strengths. And then when I got to the varsity level, it was a completely different coach. And he kind of had his system and I had to conform to that system. And that system was, we were basically a wing T offense. I was handing the ball off pretty much every play, which was not my strength. And so, you know, my junior year wasn't great. Got decent enough film throwing the ball that kind of my dad sent out my film to every college program, Division I program. And my first offer was after my junior year. My first offer was to North Carolina, UNC, and got a lot of invitations to go to camps. And I had a whole long camp schedule the summer between my junior and senior seasons. Grew up a Florida State fan. My dad went there. Both my parents went there, but my dad played football for Coach Bowden there. And so finally, midway through the summer, I got that offer from Florida State. That was my dream come true and was able to commit. And then, you know, it's funny how I think in everything, confidence matters a ton. And even like getting that offer from Florida State and committing, going into my senior year, gave me a tremendous amount of confidence. And I felt like I was the best person on the field every time. And then you got to adjust to another level. And again, when I got to Florida State, my freshman year lost all that confidence. That didn't go well. I thought about transferring. Jimbo Fisher came in my second year as the new offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. Built a great relationship with him. He instilled a lot of confidence in me. And then my redshirt sophomore year, I started. My redshirt junior went really, really well. I was actually going to leave for the draft early. End up getting injured and missed the last three games of the year and had to come back my senior year, but play with a lot of confidence. And that's when I realized like I can go play at the NFL level and so was fortunate enough to do that.
That's history. I'm curious, Christian, when you experience those changes in confidence one way or another, right? So you go from being maybe less confident to more confident, and then you're confident and you're going to get knocked down a little bit. So whenever you're dealing with that delta of lower confidence, the higher confidence, or higher confidence getting knocked down, regardless of what you're doing, whether it's football or something else, are there things that you do to try and recalibrate in those moments?
Yeah, it's preparation, right? If we talk about in the world of football, it was always about preparation, watching film. It's the self-awareness of identifying the things that weren't necessarily going that well for me, or I didn't have as much confidence in them, and identifying the opportunities of how do I invest in increasing my confidence in those specific skill sets or areas that I need to improve upon. And I think it's the same thing in business, it's the same thing in relationships. And you know, confidence begets high performance. And so how are you building the confidence through your preparation, through your work ethic, through your due diligence, whatever it is? Because yeah, when you put in the time, you know, one of my favorite questions is, do you love to win or do you hate to lose? And my answer is I hate to lose because I have the expectation to win. But the expectation comes from the confidence that I build through my preparation. And again, I think that applies to sports. I think it applies to everywhere, you know, everywhere else in life.
How do you think about preparation in terms of the right amount of preparation? Do you want to be like the right amount prepared? Do you want to be overprepared? I don't think you know, knowing what I know about you, you don't want to be underprepared. Obviously, you just said that.
Yeah.
How do you strike that right balance? When do you feel like you're locked in and you've got to kind of filter out some of the outside noise? Yeah. Like talk about that for a moment.
I think it's just that confidence level, right? I think through repetition, you get to a point where I feel most confident. I think when you go beyond that, then you start to overthink, right? I think it's like, how do you prepare enough where you react in a high level of confidence, or you participate or engage, or, you know, in a high level of confidence? And, you know, I think we all react to things in sports that, you know, we didn't anticipate. And I think it's the same thing in business. And to me, it's only through preparation that you can react in a confident way. But what happens, and I think overthinking probably, when you do over-prepare, I think it does lead to a level of insecurity or overthinking, which ends up actually creating a less amount of confidence. So there is kind of this, I don't think it's a fine line, but there's a line to cross that comes to the point where, like, you know, you're overcompensating probably for your insecurity or for your lack of confidence, and that's why you're over-preparing. But I think it's a feeling of just, do I feel confident enough to go perform my best? And if not, then I need to put a little more time in.
It's almost like one of these paradoxes, right? Like where I almost feel like you have to over-prepare a bunch to build like a set of experience where you know what the right level of preparation for you is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when I think about a lot of the things that I've done in my life, my first instincts are to, I guess, put it in the bucket of over-prepare. I probably over-prepare to kind of compensate for an insecurity that I have about whatever I'm about to do. And then you start to kind of feel what that sweet spot and more confidence, you know, that confident kind of flow state or whatever you want to call it feels like. And then you just know what it is when you get there, I guess.
Yes. The more you do it, first of all, the more confident that you become, the more aware you are of like that right level of preparation. I think you hit the nail on the head before. Like, I would much rather be overprepared than underprepared, because if you're underprepared, you're always facing an uphill battle of the insecurity of knowing that you didn't prepare well enough. And that's going to have an impact on your performance. Sometimes you're going to be able to get away with it, but most of the time you're not. And so you've got to put the time in, whether it's preparing for a presentation or preparing for a podcast interview or whatever it is. I think we all know that confidence matters in everything that we do. And so are you putting the time in to make sure that you're most confident to perform your best?
100%. Christian, I went back to, speaking of preparation, I wanted to understand a little bit more about your transition from Florida State to the NFL. And I went back to your, I guess it was your NFL combine notes. And I'm not going to come at you here with anything that, you know, is overly surprising. In terms of talking about some of your strengths, here were some of the things. It said that Christian exhibits the physical and mental toughness you like to see. Christian also exhibits great leadership qualities and toughness. Now, obviously, you proved a lot of that during your time at Florida State. However, I'm curious, were things like physical and mental toughness and great leadership qualities things that you felt have always been a part of you?
I don't think so. I think those things are definitely developed. I think a lot of appreciation like my parents from early age, right? Like, invested a ton of time and effort into me, and mainly with high expectations, you know, not toxic high expectations, but like the high expectations to go be the best version of myself and not keep me held to just the status quo or the plateau. And so that was the same for my coaches I had in high school, for the Jimbo Fisher and Bobby Bowden when I was in college. And And so I think that's definitely leadership skills are developed. I think leadership skills are earned, right? I think, or at least positions of leadership are earned through, again, how you prepare, how you perform, how you treat other people. And so it definitely, to me, it's a spectrum, right? And you've got to develop those skill sets. But I definitely was always interested in, you know, kind of being a leader on the field, or again, having an impact, or being a part of the play on a regular basis. Now, I don't know where that comes from. I do think often about, as you look at the Tom Brady's of the world and people like that, like, I think there's a level of insecurity that actually breeds greatness, or at least great performances over a long amount of time, right? I picture Tom Brady, you know, I was watching when they beat Seattle in the Super Bowl. Before that game, he did an interview. You know, he had already won 3 or 4 Super Bowls, but he did an interview where he started crying. He was still upset about being drafted in the 6th round and kind of the disrespect that he felt and the chip on the shoulder that he had developed because of the lack of confidence in his abilities to be a good quarterback at the NFL level. And even after he'd already proven to be one of the best to ever play, like, he still was dealing with that insecurity. And so I think that was fuel to the fire, for the good and for the bad, that he was so focused on proving people wrong that he did, right? He became the best ever. And I think there's some good in that, but there's probably also some toxic traits. To me, it's definitely a double-edged sword.
I think there is definitely a lot to that, Christian. I'm curious, you just talked about Tom Brady, who obviously exceeded, you know, all expectations that people had for him. I want to just ask you, you brought up Tom Brady. I want to ask you about Brock Purdy. So I've had so much confusion just sitting afar. Like, you know, I've obviously never played quarterback at any level. So I want to ask you this question. I don't understand this whole notion that people call Brock Purdy like a game manager. Like, to me, that's exactly a huge part of the job. Yeah. I actually think that's a very high compliment. I haven't understood why being a game manager is discrediting him. I'm just curious your take on, obviously, what you think, you know, obviously he's achieved so much success early on in his career. What you think in particular is making him so successful?
Yeah, I don't understand how being a game manager has suddenly become a disparaging remark, right? Like, that's his job. He's the point guard on the field. I know now, and kind of the where quarterbacks stand in the NFL at this point, right? There's a lot of playmakers, right? There's, right, who just won the MVP, Lamar Jackson, right? Who can turn a big play or make a big play at any point with his legs, with his arm, whatever. You know, that's not what San Francisco's offense requires for them to be successful. What it requires is someone to make good decisions and throw accurate footballs. And that's exactly what Brock Purdy does. He's the point guard on the field. He's distributing the ball. They have a tremendous amount of playmakers. Like, that's his job. And he made it to the Super Bowl, and he made it to the NFC Championship last year. Like, I think he's tremendous at his job. He does exactly what is asked of him. He does it at a very high level. I hope he continues to do that so he can get a little money in his pocket and get paid for how he's performed. I think he's done, you know, as I look at him, what do I think he does really well? I think number one, the moment's never too big for him. I think that's what I've most been impressed by. I think last year when he stepped in as a rookie, and then this year dealing with the high expectations of, you know, having to get back to the NFC Championship and dealing with, you know, they were a number one seed. You know, there's always this tremendous amount of pressure on him to perform, and he played the same in every game and in every situation, and even in the Super Bowl, the moment never looked like it was too big for him. And I think it's very impressive for someone who was deemed Mr. Irrelevant, was the last pick in the NFL draft, came from Iowa State, which is a good program, but not as, you know, isn't the biggest football program in college football. So I think that's what I've been most impressed by. And then you look, right, he's an accurate passer, he makes good decisions, he knows where to get the ball, like, he does his job really well. But I think him handling the pressure, I think it's similar, right? Patrick Mahomes, the moment's never too big for him. Now, Patrick, you can argue, is maybe a bigger playmaker, you know, compared to Brock, but Brock's not afraid to use his legs. We saw that especially in the NFC Championship against the Lions. But yeah, I think he just performs at a high level. He looks super confident out there. The moment's never too big for him, and that's what I'm most impressed by.
He is so impressive to me, and I'm just really excited to watch his continued growth and trajectory. And I can guarantee you this, no matter what Brock Purdy does, he brings a set of skills that I think would be useful for any organization.
Yeah.
Regardless, that takes me to kind of what you're doing now, Christian. You said that when you hung up your cleats, you missed a lot of things that you took from sport. However, you missed in particular the community, and you've done something about it. You launched The Post, which is a network of former athletes turned business leaders. And I am so curious to dig into what you're doing with The Post, because I'm just a massive believer in the power of community, the power of bringing people together to have conversations, to learn from one another, to lift each other up. And I want to know, when was the first aha moment for you that The Post was something that you needed to build?
Yeah, look, it was rooted in my own experience, my own journey as an athlete. And we're so deeply connected to the athlete community for a really long time, right? Through our experiences on teams and in locker rooms, you build these really deep relationships with people. And what I realized I desperately missed, not only being around people that I had a tremendous amount in common with, but there's an energy that you feed off of when you're in a room of highly competitive, highly ambitious, hardworking people. You know, people who want to be the best at whatever they're pursuing, the people that aren't okay with plateaus, that are, you know, looking to always get better, have the humility to say that there are things that they need to work on to get there, that they need to rely on people around them to help them get there. When you're surrounded by that, you feed off of it, right? We're so influenced by the people we surround ourselves with. And I had moved to New York City. My last year in the NFL was 2016. I had moved to New York City in the fall of 2017 to start my business career, which was originally in finance. And quickly I realized, like, being in the world of business was very different than being surrounded by athletes. And so that's when I realized I desperately missed it. And how, you know, so I joined a bunch of different things, realized I couldn't find something that was specific for me. And, you know, if it didn't exist, then let's go build it. And very early on, you know, had so much validation around this idea when we started kind of hosting little dinners in New York City and social events and trying to tell people what we're doing. You know, there was such an extreme amount of validation that people felt the same way as me. And what's cool is, like, our oldest members in their mid-70s, that, like, that desire to be around this community never goes away. And so it's a unique opportunity to build the infrastructure, bring everyone together again. And it's magic, right? It's magical when you build the space where, again, these types of people who are defined by their competitiveness, who their desire to be great at whatever they do, when you put them in the same room together, you know, a lot of amazing things happen.
Was there a moment, you know, after you began building The Post, when a member or a prospective member or somebody said something to you that you just said, it just confirmed for you, like, full stop, that I am on the right path with this thing here?
Yeah, it's been a lot. I mean, a lot of individuals saying, like, I remember one very early on said that we were building something that everyone needs, but didn't know that they were missing. And then others, like, we've been copied on emails to, like, other organizations, other membership clubs that, like, one person in particular, there's this really prestigious leadership network, and we were BCC'd on the email going to that other club saying, you know, this member was ending their membership fees because they felt more of a sense of belonging at The Post than they did for, you know, in a day's experience than compared to a year-long experience at this other place. And then just seeing the types of people, like, we have a handful of C-suite level people at very, you know, leading very large organizations, publicly traded organizations. And again, to still see the desire to be around this community, to still get better and leverage this community to get better, like, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of validation to keep doing what we're doing.
How do you continue enabling that connection in an authentic way as the membership network continues to scale?
Yeah. So, look, it takes a lot of intentionality and it takes a lot of listening and paying attention. We are in the relationship business, right? Like, we're not dating app. We're not that kind of relationship, but we're building connections between people. I think, you know, the power of connection is tremendous. And especially when people share that, again, that same mindset to be the best at whatever they're doing. And so for us, like, listening to people's needs and desires and goals and figuring out, like, okay, these people should meet. And the other thing we do is we build cohorts that we call teams, and everyone is assigned to a team and they meet on a recurring basis. And really, a team is a confidential peer advisory group. Again, we listen to their desires and we build these teams based off of similar age and goals and job title and industry and work experience. And we try to have a lot of intersectionality between the members of those teams. And we do events and we try to be intentional about those events. So one of our events we do is what we call Summit, which is a two-day conference. But the first day of the conference is totally dedicated to competition, because you can't bring a bunch of athletes together and not compete. But we break people up into teams, and we intentionally curate those teams. And then those teams go playing a golf tournament, a pickleball tournament, a tennis tournament, which is fun for athletes. But what we're doing is like we're creating a space for you to build relationships on those teams and get to know each other, and in the hopes that those relationships will be mutually beneficial. But yeah, we're definitely, so we say to our team, like, we're in the relationship business and it's our job to listen and facilitate those connections.
I'm all in on the relationship business. I love the power of connection and bringing people who are like-minded together. People who maybe don't even know why them connecting with one another is going to be valuable to each of them respectively. I think there's very few things that are more powerful than that. Like, when did you first learn the power of relationships?
A long time ago. Like, I think especially when you're on a team, right? And when you're competing on a team, you all have the same collective goal to go win the game, go win the championship. And when you're on a team, you realize we all have our different strengths. We all have our different roles. We're all bringing something different to the table, but we rely on each other to fill the gaps that we have, right? Like, as a quarterback, I needed my offensive line to block. I needed my receivers to catch, right? I needed my running back to run the ball. Like, and I had to rely on those relationships to go execute my dream of winning the game or making the NFL or whatever my goal was. And it's the same in everything else. Like, are you surrounding yourself with the people that are helping you get there? And are you helping them too, right? It's a two-way street, right? Like, I also have to contribute, engage in that relationship. And that's our expectation of our members, right? Like, we're not a social club. We're not a professional development organization. What we kind of say is we're on the competitive development side, right? We're bringing competitors. We're harnessing that competitive nature. We're helping them identify what are they competing for, and then building this roster, this team, this high-performing team of individuals who have different strengths and different roles, but can contribute to the whole team performing well and achieving the goals that we all have. I think we all have wins. I think the defining characteristic of that win looks different from everyone else, whether it's getting a promotion or launching a company or getting married, whatever it is. But, you know, seizing the opportunity to surround yourself with people who can fill your gaps to help you get there.
Been the most surprising thing for you from a business perspective as you've built the Post?
It's a good question. Two things. I think number one, again, I think seeing our thesis was once an athlete, always an athlete. Like, it's such a deeply ingrained identity that doesn't leave you. And so having a member in their mid-70s, our average age member for the membership is 39 years old, that like, that thesis, we had hoped it was true, but it held true. So I don't know if it was surprising, but we weren't sure, and that was validated. I think, you know, there's so much crossover between being an athlete and being an entrepreneur and building a business, and the reliance on team, the reliance on good communication, the reliance on showing up and performing and preparing, like, and especially the quarterback, right? The ups and downs of business, and especially building a company. And as a quarterback, you got to stay level the whole time and not panic, but also not celebrate, you know, be overly exuberant when things go well. But I've learned way more in the last 3 years than I did in the previous 10. And so it's been great to be a part of that experience, but we still have a lot more to go. I still have a ton more to get better at, a ton more to learn. And so I have the humility to say that. And again, the humility to rely that I'm very dependent on my team. I'm only as good as the people around me. And so, yeah.
Christian, what advice do you have to someone listening who wants to build community around them or build a community amongst people or an area that they're a discipline that they're passionate about? What's the first step that they should take?
Yeah, look, I think it's identifying, right? Communities are built, like, there are boundaries, right? For there to be a community, there has to be boundaries. And so what are the boundaries that you're setting up? What's the intersectionality of the people that are within those boundaries, right? For us, it was the athlete identity, and the athlete identity in business is leaders. So that, right, whether if you're not an athlete, okay, you're outside those boundaries. You can't be a part of the Post, right? Also, if you were an athlete, but you're not really that interested in business or doing things after your sports career is over, like, okay, we're not really for you either. And then once you get the people inside, like, am I listening, right? Like, what are the values that they are members or people who are part of the community? What would they value in being a part of and experiencing? And so you've got to identify the core things that those people, once they're inside the boundaries, that they're most interested in, and how to connect them, right? Like, what is the reason that you're connecting them? What is the benefit to all parties involved to be a part of the community? Like, you just you got to be super clear and super intentional about those things.
Christian, as we get ready to wrap up our conversation, I'm curious, 10 years from now, a news article is written about the Post. What do you want it to say?
Yeah, look, my long-term vision for the Post is really to create this space that just is the continuation of everyone's athletic career, right? Like, I think we see the numbers around how athletes struggle when sport is over, and it doesn't have to be that way. I think a lot of us struggle because of the sense of loss of identity and the sense of a loss of community. And so for us, if we can, you know, we want to be a premier organization. We're exclusive to high performers from the sports background, but in business. But our identity is to build that aspirational place that all athletes go. And now maybe they're not necessarily competing on the field or the court or the pool or whatever, but they're competing in business. And the sport of business is not very different than sports. It requires a lot of the same things. Maybe it's not the same adrenaline rush. So, you know, my hope is that we're synonymous with what it means to be an athlete and the continuation of that career. And just hopefully we've made an impact on people's lives in a positive way in society in general. And yeah, that's my vision.
There's no question that you are impacting the lives of all your members in such a positive way. And I always like to think of these communities as having a ripple effect. That's kind of the phrase I like to use, right? Because when you make a positive impact on an individual or a group of people, you then have a ripple effect on those people, then go on to do things that positively impact other people in so many different ways, in sports, business, life in general, whatever it is. I just have such great admiration for what you're doing, Christian. You're creating a powerful ripple effect with the Post, and I just can't wait to continue following the story of what you continue to build. So thank you for being a tarp puller. You're forever a part of the Everybody Pulls the Tarp community, and we'll have to catch up again soon, all right?
Sounds good. I appreciate it, Andrew.
All right, everyone. If you loved this episode, you might also enjoy my interview with Rand Pecknold. In 1994, Rand took the head ice hockey coaching job at Quinnipiac University for a $6,700 salary. At the time, Quinnipiac was playing Division III hockey, coming off of a dismal 6-18 season and practicing at midnight, the only time available at the local rink. Over the past 30 years, Rand catapulted the program to national prominence and recently led the team to its first national championship. This is another episode you don't want to miss. Check it out and let me know what you think. Thank you for joining me this week. Be sure to subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you can catch all of our upcoming episodes. And if you are like me and want a world full of tarp pullers, then leave a review to help others find us. You can also follow me on Twitter at Andrew H. Moses. That's Andrew H. Moses. And be sure to sign up for my email newsletter at everybodypullsthetarp.com/newsletter. I'll share tips and insights to help you achieve maximum success and happiness. Today is a great day to pull the tarp. I am rooting for you. See you next time.